From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this news update. Alaska lawmakers have begun a new legislative session in which they'll resume debates that have dominated recent sessions. That includes the size of the check that should be paid to residents from the state's oil wealth fund. Some lawmakers are hopeful agreements can be reached on long-simmering divisive issues, including possibly setting a new Alaska permanent fund dividend formula. But after last year's drawn-out sessions, others are cautious at their expectations. Most legislative seats are up for election this year. And a Superior Court judge in Anchorage issued an order that temporarily halts an effort to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy. The order effectively prevents the Recall Dunleavy campaign from gathering signatures until the state Supreme Court reviews the case. The group defending Dunleavy, Stand Tall with Mike, filed a brief last week telling Anchorage Judge Eric Arseth that its efforts irreparably harmed without a pause. Craig Richards is an attorney for the group. He says people shouldn't be signing a petition that could change.
There are four charges that the Superior Court ruled should go before the voters. It simply makes sense that we make sure that those are the ultimate ones that survive before people sign it. Otherwise, the validity of the signatures will get muddied.
Judge Arseth had ruled in early January that recall proponents should be allowed to gather signatures. He gave the state's Division of Elections a February 10th deadline to provide the group with petition booklets. At the time, he said, quote, the court does not intend on granting a stay of that process, according to the Anchorage Daily News. This ruling runs counter to that statement, but Richards says he wasn't surprised by the order. Lawyers for the Recall Dunleavy campaign weren't immediately available to talk about the ruling. And the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska says the state's financial regulator is chilling voices critical of Native corporation management. Now, the Alaska Supreme Court is set to hear a case that could decide how much power the state has to police shareholders' speech. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
Newspaper editor Deanna Hecker has worked at the Nome Nugget since 2003, and all letters to the editor pass her desk. So when she received one in early 2017, the paper printed it. It wasn't an endorsement of a candidate, which the newspaper prints as paid ads.
We don't want to end up with 50 letters to the editor endorsing the same candidate.
But this letter, it took aim at Sitnasook Native Corporation's election process.
And to me, voicing an opinion on process is exactly what letters to the editor are all about. That's, you voice your opinion, and I didn't think twice about it, because to me that falls under the First Amendment rights of free speech.
But the state's financial regulator sees it differently. The Division of Banking and Securities regulates Alaska's Native corporations, including shareholder elections. In fact, it's empowered to police online and written speech in a way designed to ensure fairness and transparency. And one of those ways is to require shareholders to file disclosures before making statements that could sway shareholders in an election. Now, the letter didn't name anyone, but after receiving a complaint, the state investigated and fined letter writer Austin Amasuk $1,500 and ordered him not to do it again. ACLU of Alaska's legal director, Stephen Kotev, says there are good reasons for states to regulate shareholder conduct.
Courts have almost universally agreed that these sorts of limitations are supported by compelling government interests and the interest in having fair and open elections among corporate entities.
But he says in this case, the state went too far. The gist of Austin Amasuk's letter was that shareholders shouldn't give their voting power to the majority board. The state claimed Amasuk's letter was misleading, something he denies and remains unresolved. But the legality of this case isn't over whether his letter was factual or not. It hinges on whether he should have filed a disclosure outlining his relationship with other shareholders with the division before writing in the newspaper. In a general statement, the division says its disclosure requirements are intended to promote fairness, truth, and transparency. No one from the state attorney general's office, which is representing the division, would talk on tape. But Assistant Attorney General Robert Schmidt wrote in a short statement that the state's interested in making sure proxy statements, as these ballots are called, do not contain material misstatements so shareholders can have accurate information. The ACLU maintains that the state is using its corporate speech policing power too broadly. Kotev says it was the general leadership of Sitnasook Native Corporation that Amasuk took aim at.
And if the state is in the business of telling citizens or squelching citizen speech that is meant to criticize the corporate entity, then we have crossed the line and we are on our way well down that slippery slope.
In 2019, banking and securities received 27 complaints and issued enforcement orders against shareholders in 5 cases, 4 of which involved posts on Facebook. Now, this Supreme Court case is a legal fight between a state regulator and a civil liberties group. But a friend of the court brief, signed by former Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth, was submitted on behalf of 4 regional native corporations. It backs up the state. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And in other news, a new company would like to build a $12 billion natural gas export terminal in Southeast Alaska waters near Prince Rupert, British Columbia. But as Eric Stone reports from Alaska's Energy Desk, some aren't convinced the project will be viable.
The company is called Alaskan LNG. President Bing Giroux says his company hopes to capitalize on natural gas trapped in northern British Columbia.
We're awash with gas. And so that gas is looking for a market.
As more and more customers in Asia move away from coal, demand for BC's gas is forecast to grow. But shipping natural gas is complicated, in part because it's a gas. It's not like shipping coal or lumber or even oil. To ship natural gas efficiently, you need to cool it down until it condenses into a liquid. And for that, you need something called a liquefaction plant. Giroux says his company is investigating a site in Southeast Alaska, just over the border from BC. The idea is to take the gas from northern BC, liquefy it on a floating platform attached to a small island, and put up to 12 million metric tons per year of liquefied natural gas on ships bound for Asia. And Giroux says some of that gas could make its way to Southeast Alaska.
Certainly could help a lot of Alaska communities or remote mining projects, that sort of thing, maybe switch from diesel to natural gas.
But why bother crossing an international border?
We like the Alaska side partially because it makes the pipeline shorter. It saves about 60 kilometers. And Alaska has a fairly clear and robust permitting process.
But some experts say they don't believe the hype. Larry Persily is a professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He's followed global gas markets for decades, and he's seen a number of projects try to capitalize on Asia's growing demand for natural gas.
I just think, haven't we heard this before?
Persily points to a proposed state-backed pipeline and export facility that would take gas from Prudhoe Bay to south-central Alaska for export to Asia. Various iterations of that idea have been studied for decades, but the project has now stalled amid skepticism from Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration. Persily says one reason for that is that the necessary facilities are simply too expensive.
The world's always going to burn the cheapest gas it can get delivered to the dock. And that's always been the challenge for Alaska. And I think that will be a challenge facing this project, too.
Early estimates from Alaskan LNG put the terminal's cost at around $12 billion. Persily says the economics just don't make sense.
The market is adequately supplied. It doesn't need another project at the moment.
Persily points out that there's another natural gas terminal under construction, about 70 air miles away in Kitimat, B.C. He says community members might not be amenable to a new facility that would attract massive gas tankers to Southeast Alaska.
I mean, I would think you'd have fishermen who'd say, I don't care about natural gas, I'm fine with it, but how many tankers are you going to come through the water? What if a tanker is a spill?
For his part, Alaskan LNG's Bing Giroux doesn't think the market is saturated. Oil giant Shell has a 40% stake in the Kitimat terminal, and they also own lots of wells in the northern BC gas fields.
And so, yes, the LNG facility in Kitimat's going ahead, but that only really consumes Shell's gas. So everybody else is looking for another facility.
He said in this early part of the process, the company is just trying to determine whether a terminal is feasible.
We'll do a little geotech. We'll do some wind and weather analysis to make sure that they actually are a viable site. And this is where the community consultation element comes in. We talk to people and making sure we're doing something that's right for everybody.
And some locals sound positive on that issue. Ketchikan City Mayor Bob Sievertson said in a mid-December city council meeting that a terminal near Prince Rupert could help the city transition away from diesel.
Maybe in the winter, when we get short of power, we'd have natural gas to provide power and not run antiquated diesel engines.
Right now, Alaskan is still exploring its options. But if all goes according to plan, Giroux says the plant could come online in 2027 or 2028. Reporting from Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
And in other news, a Yupik elder born to nomadic parents in western Alaska just after the start of the Great Depression is scheduled to be the first person counted in the 2020 census. Lizzie Chemewak will be honored during a ceremony today at the school of Tuksuk Bay, just off Alaska's western coast in the Bering Sea. And taking a look at the weather tonight, snow and rain are expected. Snow accumulation around 1 inch and lows around 30.